What is up? It is Tuesday night. Welcome to episode 52 of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Wheat, joined by X16 user EG Idra and EG in control. Still holding it down over there, Taylor.
Still holding it down.
To the grave.
This is Inside the Game, and this weekend, three out of four of us were definitely inside of PAX, as it was a crazy, crazy event. As always, PAX is usually quite impressive. It's more of a show for, like, the fans rather than an E3, which is more of a show for the media, the consumer. But I did have fun this weekend. Got to see you guys, and here we are for another episode. We were commenting before the show started that we were in kind of a shitty like portion of the week because the Heart of the Storm beta has been announced, but it's not necessarily out and in everyone's hands right now.
Hey, Wheat.
Yeah.
Do you want to put a show up on Team Liquid?
God damn! I did, man.
Thanks, man.
God, I did.
If you're not too busy, Wheat. All right.
God, I swear to God, it was up there. What is it not? Son of a bitch. God, Jeff, I don't think I can take much more abuse from you, man.
First Taylor not being on check six, and so now Jeff with this.
Yeah.
I'm the good member.
You are the good host.
Yep. See if JP's available to host Inside the Game and can get him.
I can, you know, could just
a free agent. Right, he's a free agent in the hosting world for shows right now, I think.
Yeah.
I miss his transitions.
Transition? All right, I fixed it, Jeff. All right? Good. I fixed it, okay?
Should have done it to begin with.
All right. All right. Well, you were telling your life story before the show.
Old age starts hitting online hosts, though. You know what I mean? It's like forgetting to put it up on the internet. And then all of a sudden you're changing team names. Whatever, we're moving past it.
We are. Forgive and forget, man.
It was my third PAX, and it was my first time actually, I would say, attending a PAX. Like, the other two PAX I've gone to have been PAX East, and the entire time I either sat at the booth playing people at the Kingston booth, or I was, like, doing a state of the game there, or sitting in my hotel room being tired. And I gotta say, I am a fucking idiot, because this PAX, I had finally, like, made time to wander around, and it's really cool playing games before they come out. It's really cool talking to developers. It's really fun meeting people that love games, and I hope I do more PAX in the future, because I will do more of that. I like to play other games as well.
You weren't playing in the tournament, right? Only Greg, only you were playing in the ESWC tournament?
Only Greg.
Me and Suppy from EG.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you have any... I mean, Greg, you were around, of course. The Reddit picture made it to the top.
Keep forgetting the second one.
Which was the second one?
Greg fucking stone-facing the crap.
Oh, yeah.
A picture. Greg was so not happy with this picture.
Yeah. I didn't see that one. What was it?
Oh, God. Could I find it?
Wait,
look up Idra Happy on...
Oh, yeah. Tell us the story.
Like, every picture I take looks like that. I don't... Yeah. What?
God. I've teased you about that before, too, man. Like, you really just... You just straight-face fucking stare into the camera, just know... Like, if there was an emotion-o-meter, you're towards the angry side. It's not even close to the happy.
Well, sometimes I look pleasant. I don't know.
Okay.
Sometimes. No, I usually just don't worry about it. I just, like, look at the camera, and then they take the picture, and then that's that.
And that is that. I can't. I'm looking for the link, you guys. I thought it was
said
like.
You need to crack a smile.
Idra's happy to see me, or something like that.
Yeah, it's that link right there. I just don't click on the link anymore.
You got it.
Oh, Idra was really excited to see me. I saw that first. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
That's the picture.
How I look.
For everyone who's lazy.
I'm really awkward in that.
Hey, Greg, can I get a picture of you looking really fucking angry, staring into the camera? Sure, man.
I imagine that's what lots of my fans want. I mean, it kind of goes with everything.
Yeah, except
I did look pretty angry.
His mom finds this picture on the computer, and she just, like, deletes it because he shouldn't be hanging out with those kinds of people.
Who is that angry man? Did he just catch you after a match or something, or was that just genuine?
No, that's next to the Kingston booth, so that was just a regular picture.
Moments later, Greg Itcherfield struck the person.
And then the other picture that we was alluding to.
Am I going to be able to find the, was, this picture?
You, yep, you sitting hip to hip with Bryce.
That was fun.
Ladies and gentlemen of Inside the Game, for the first time in the history of gaming, okay? The history of gaming. We had a tandem StarCraft II match with Machine and Idra versus a couple of people that attended the Kingston booth.
Yeah.
And it was fucking adorable.
It was pretty.
We were actually
awesome.
Playing really well the second one. We were like shift returning to the minerals after building depots. Yep. Our macro was clean and like
yeah.
Still green push.
Greg, so... I think you're strangely at home in team games because I like normally I saw moments when you'd get angry, but I think deep down you knew you could blame it entirely on Bryce. You were completely calm with it.
Like, that's kind of help.
Oh, so
as long as I'm with someone as submissive as that, and I can just yell at him the whole time. Like you and me doing team games, I don't know how that would work. But yeah, with guys, it's fucking. He sits there mashing A, and I tell him he's retarded.
So the story behind this is that you know these guys were playing games, and obviously not every guy that walks in there is someone who can just sit down and actually play a game. So they would do handicaps and stuff, and these two were totally in for trying it out. You guys first played as Protoss and pretty much demolished some kid. Like you kind of broke his heart a little bit, and was looking pretty good at Protoss. Only until like the end when you were trying to bring in the attack moving and the warp ends at the same time did it get a little bit. But overall, like both the control were looking at each other, going like, not bad. And then you guys went Terran. and like the moment you guys build your first racks, I think is when you start realizing like. Holy shit.
In their defense, they actually did an okay job with Terran 2, but we saw this with Protoss as well. It's just that they played someone a lot worse with Protoss, and that's that they could macro just fine, they could build just fine, but once it got to attacking, the coordination between keyboard and mouse is really difficult, and like...
Army control was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
stimming and all that.
That's where everything fell apart in the first game, and like we were able to win anyway just because we had build order and he wasn't ready for it and whatnot. And then the second one, we kind of just realized that doesn't work, so we did the first Marine attack, and I told Bryce just not do anything, and I did it all with the mouse, like right-clicking on units to attack and all that. But then for the second, we had a Marine Marauder. We were actually macroing really well. I think we were in good shape. We sent our little army out into the center, and we ran into two Colossus with the Bio Ball, so obviously went to retreat. But then we both panicked. Like, I'm trying to click it back, and he's trying to do it with the keyboard somehow. I don't know how the hell he thought he was.
He was hitting A.
Or, yeah, or something. And we just lost, like, all our units to two Colossus and got massacred. We had the macro down pretty well, but army control just does not work.
It was
pretty
awesome.
I think, like, a few strategies, we are one or two packs away from seeing that mastered. Like,
I think
the Machine Idra tandem team could be the new hit.
Yeah.
A little practice, I don't know. I think we might be able to beat a diamond player or so.
As Protoss, I definitely
love masters, right?
I need to bring back Team Melee.
Okay. That one was terrible.
I think the guy you played was the worst. Platinum or Diamond. But
yeah, he was. He was a Diamond.
I think Diamond's doable.
So my other favorite type of game that we played was when we did the math challenge, which was essentially every 2 minutes. I would turn off in control and machines monitor, and then they'd have to answer a math question. And it was pretty awesome. I could actually see that. Who was it? Was Machine telling me that Nada, they used to give Nada math problems while he practiced or trained or whatever. Well, it was the same thing, except you were fucking blind for like however long it took. And near the end, there was a couple where like I think Bryce was out for a solid minute, and then he had just a minute to do whatever he needed to do.
He actually won a game with the screen off. Like, the guy just GG'd.
Yeah.
Like, he attacked in the Zerglings. Bryce was blind. The Zerglings won, and he was just like, oh.
Yeah.
I had the advantage of going second. Like, Bryce at first was really painful. Because I was able to go second, I started doing things like DJ, we would turn the monitor off at 2 minutes. So at, like, a minute 45, I'd start setting up my macro for a little bit of a gap. And then I'd come back and be able to do things. So I was metagaming the shit out of that.
it was pretty funny. So that's kind of what went on in the Kingston booth. You guys, no, actually only in control. You played in the Trial of Zelnaga.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stipulation around it. There's a sort of a lot of like, you know, is it going to be worth watching? Is it going to be worth even playing? There was even a little bit of controversy about, well, no one told Bomber what the hell was going on. So, you know, which is like, I got to imagine is a little strange when some of the things go up. But anyway, how was it?
Um, to be honest, going right down the middle, it was my first time working with the Red Bull crew, and they were extremely accommodating about the fact that I'm sponsored by Monster. They allowed for, you know, any kind of branding. They're very comfortable with it. They're really friendly. They put us up in a really nice hotel. They travel us around. Make no mistake, the people that attended that were obviously paid, and we were paid pretty well given what we were doing. So on, like, the biz and the handling side of things, it was awesome. And I'm really excited to have worked with the Red Bull guys because, we've had our criticisms of the events in the past that they've ran, but beyond the criticism, their production, their excitement, the fact that they're in this space and that they're doing anything with StarCraft II is really exciting. As far as this event goes, I very specifically was kind of worried because when I initially heard Red Bull was coming to Seattle, I, like everybody else, I think, got really excited about kind of like what we saw in Texas, just a really nice competitive event with great casting, great production, and amazing players. But instead, we got this UMS, so everyone was kind of a little bit sketched about it, a little bit, is it going to be good? But I think the end result is that this is a really nice one-off thing. Like, I would never want three or four of these a year. I think that'd be a terrible idea. I think that'd be a waste of money and everything. But I think as kind of a fun end-of-the-season wind-down, smaller event, you know, there wasn't 500 people attending, there wasn't thousands of tickets sold or anything like that. I think it was a really cool, fun little event, and everyone was kind of in the spirit of that. I think the bomber thing's a little bit silly, and, obviously it has to be explained to these guys a little bit better. A couple of players kind of got frustrated because they're players, so they can't really help but to want to win, when at the end of the day it actually doesn't fucking matter what you do. It's like you have to win over the crowds. So that's what I try to do to the best of my ability. But I thought it was cool, and it was really fun, and like I said, I thought the Red Bull guys did a great job.
Right on, Greg. You got to see a little bit of it. What was your perception watching it?
Yeah, I don't know. I watched one match and then like ran away as fast as I possibly could. It's awesome that Red Bull is involved in StarCraft II. The Dallas event was great. Even the other stuff they hosted, there was a bit more event, like the training facility kind of thing. Even that was cool. But this, the games were just so silly and stupid. Like the first 5-10 minutes, I thought was pretty funny. The first nuclear catastrophe, it's just really fun to watch. But it's especially because they used one map for two or three matches in a row, and they just kept doing the same stuff over and over and over. And it clearly wasn't balanced by race. Like, when you play Zerg in it, if a nuke hits your base and turns a Protoss, you can evacuate everything. If you do it as Zerg, you lose all your larvae and probably your queens and stuff, so it resets a lot more. So, like, it's not fair. And it wasn't intended to be a fair competition, but, you know, like, still, you have pro gamers playing it. They don't want to just go up there and be forced to lose. And then everything comes down to the crowd, so it's not even really a competition. It's just, like, it was really, really stupid. I'm sure it's the kind of thing some people like, but like Jeff said, I would have been really, really excited if they had just had another really cool tournament up in Seattle, and if they were another addition to the tournament scene instead of a silly exhibition match.
And I agree with everything Greg said. Like, I think most players would. Like, we crave competition, and that's what really drives us, but what I kind of try to take my perspective and put it aside for a moment and see the interaction and the excitement of other people. And I thought they liked it a lot. You know, the audience both there and online seemed to really enjoy it. It was also a really good bait for how many people are way too fucking serious on the internet. It was really funny seeing some of the comments where people were like white knighting guys that were getting planet crackers and they were getting upset about balance within the games and like hypothesizing
really?
Day 9. Oh yeah, there's people attacking Day 9. For like not doing a good enough, they're like, he's the worst dungeon master I've ever seen. Like guys, like,
you know, it actually is really, really hard to pull that off. You know, we on Kings of Tin, we play this God's Land map, which is kind of the same concept, but we just put like 8 guys in, and then you sort of do it. And throughout the thing, like, you have to put in all these crazy commands to actually get some of the stuff to work. And yeah, I didn't see all of the options that were available, but I can imagine just actually trying to keep it interesting while also trying to, you know, hype up that level of entertainment has to be hard.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, man. Like, one and done.
Yep.
Like, kind of cool. I mean, I think the spectators, the amount of spectators, you know, kind of also said that. I think at one time, I'm like, maybe during the finals, there was, 15,000, 17,000 So, it also didn't get the same viewership as, say, a regular StarCraft tournament, but I think it was those people who are just looking for something different, and,
I hope they come back to Seattle, and I hope they rotate this around. Like, I hope it's not Seattle is the Trial of Xel'Naga place, because I'll just reiterate what I tweeted and talked about at the event. The Northwest deserves an event. I really do think that you could sell out 2,000 or 2,500 tickets, and you could fill seats with people there. They'd come from Vancouver, Portland, and Seattle, and I think it'd be a great place for that. So I will lobby, and I think that Seattle will deliver.
Yeah, that's one thing we've kind of seen, that a lot of times when you put a tournament in a place that hasn't had a lot of esports events, especially StarCraft II tournaments before, like in ASL, we've heard a lot of good stories about the Australian Southeast Asia WCS, the crowd really, really comes out. Like, every esports fan in the area who can possibly make it goes just to show their support of it and show that they welcome esports in that area, and they're always really enthusiastic. Like, some of the best events I've been to have been in those kind of areas. And Seattle is really cool. I'd like to go back there, so people show those tournaments there.
What do you think, Pinduser? I mean, we've seen Vegas kind of introduced by IPL recently, and I feel like at first that maybe wasn't the biggest success Atlantic City, but when it went to Vegas, it was a bigger success. What do you think about Northwest Region, especially considering the International and the League of Legends competition absolutely filled up, to the brim for the most part?
I mean, I was watching the International tournament all weekend long, and I thought it was great. I mean, I'm a huge Dota fan. I thought they did a great job. I love how Valve is really supporting the game. We already talked about, like, the in-game branding for teams and all the stuff that they're doing with Dota 2. So I just thought that was excellent. Very well executed. They had a ton of viewers. I think $1 million prize pool is just way over the top right now.
Yeah.
All things considered. I mean, I think they could pull the same viewership with, like, a $250,000 prize pool, but... then again, it kind of just, like, puts them on the map, setting the bar at a million, which is kind of cool. Other organizations will try and catch up in that regard. And as far as Vegas is concerned, I really enjoyed the event in Vegas. I had a great time. There were a lot more people there than Atlantic City. I think Atlantic City was just a poor choice of venue. It's like when you think of esports, Atlantic City doesn't really jump out, and it's kind of like a poor man's Vegas. Everything's just... I don't know. It's just not a very nice area. But Vegas was an outstanding venue, and I think we're doing it again this year. And I think I'm going to be a part of that as well. So that.
But
should
what
be
about?
Exciting.
I mean, what? I mean, Seattle. You're pretty much in agreement that, like, the International pulled in enough, like an MLG or another major competition in the Northwest region.
Oh yeah. And there's, I know so many players and friends in the history of gaming from that region. It's definitely a very esports. Friendly esports populated region.
I think so, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it. Really, and is. There's other events there too, if I'm not mistaken. Is it just PAX? I mean, I think there have been a few NVIDIA LANs up there. Sure,
much, much smaller things.
Yeah, small scale.
Not for a long time has there been anything on a larger scale there. I think they had a Counter-Strike event in like 07 or something like that. But nothing StarCraft for sure.
Did you guys get a chance to check out the International at all?
Yeah, well, let's just talk about that next, since we, it kind of rounds out the packs. The packs. What are you laughing at, Jeff?
Pain User's like your fast forward version of you.
Yeah. I mean, it works. It works. So I kind of have a couple of things this weekend. Obviously, the International, it's one of those things I don't think people don't know what it is, because it was so talked about, especially amongst the esports communities and different games or different genre of games, etc. And Dota 2 was announced to get coverage on Team Liquid. Now, it's not really much of a secret that a lot of the TL staff are totally gaga over Dota 2, to the point where...
Especially after they announced they're covering it.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I think they all were pretty much saying things like, this is the next Brood War. Like, they feel like it has that level of a skill ceiling, etc. And so they're really up on it. Anyway, they added to Team Liquid. The International happened this weekend. EG was a part of it, too. Did pretty well. Idra, you got to go there, and you made a few comments, and I'd love to kind of hear those again in regards to sort of Dota 2, the International, and especially how it relates to WCS.
Yeah, I spent most of Sunday there, and I was really, really impressed. Like, I don't really watch other games. I kind of enjoyed watching Quake, but everything else has been pretty boring for me. I don't play any other games, particularly any other MOBAs, because it feels like something where you have to have quite a bit of knowledge of what's going on to actually be able to follow it. Like, if you don't know what all the spells and abilities do, you can see the stuff's attacking stuff. Maybe you understand what last hitting is, and then that's about it. You just see random lights going off all over. But Dota, like, especially the event, really, really impressed me. The venue, I feel like the venue is the best-looking thing I've seen for an esports event. They had an auditorium or an opera house or something like that. Mm-hmm, had multiple levels. The entire audience was out in the audience, and the whole stage was set up. The booths looked great. All the lighting was very good. Like, one of our photographers was with me while I was watching a portion of it, and he commented on how much better the lighting was than MLG's, and you could really tell it looked much better. They also had, like, the private box booth areas on the second level. They had those set up with team banners on it, so each team had a little private VIP area. That was all really, really nice. The show itself, the casters were great. They did a good job of explaining things and maintaining the excitement, and it was very different from StarCraft 2. There wasn't a whole lot of banter or downtime, because one thing I really liked about Dota is when it starts with the picks and bans and all that stuff, you have excitement right from the start. Like, the build-up in StarCraft 2, the first 5 minutes, the casters just kind of have to bullshit. There's not actually that much to talk about. You're talking about the players in the past. You're not talking about anything that's currently relevant. You're just filling time. Whereas there, they have excitement right from the start, unless some of the Chinese teams are playing. So it's like, the entire show was really, really impressive to me. I wish I knew more about the game. So I couldn't actually appreciate a lot of that, but I still enjoyed it, which says a lot to me, because I usually don't. I was very, very impressed.
Well, go ahead. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I was going to say, my experience with Dota, like, I obviously follow the EG squad, and I've watched a lot of the matches in the International and a little bit beyond, and a lot of people are talking about this on the forums, and I have to reiterate a point Greg made as well. I don't know anything about Dota outside of the very little that I've watched. But the casters do such a frickin' amazing job of making it, for me, as an entry-level, obviously gamer-centric guy who knows games, making it really interesting, informing me. I only watched like 5 or 6, you know, total matches, but I felt like I was starting to understand it already. And they made me appreciate it, and I think the casters, I can't even name them, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know enough. I know Toby, obviously, a great guy, but beyond him, I don't know the names of casters, but as a casting group, that game is blessed with a really good group of people that I think makes it a much more enjoyable game. And then as far as the game's concerned, I really like it because I feel like I like that it has the reputation that it's not quite as, I don't know, some people probably argue it's a little bit easier than Han, or maybe it's as hard as Han at least, but that's the argument. And certainly it's more difficult than LoL. There's probably nobody that's saying that LoL is more complicated and difficult than Dota.
Absolutely.
And I feel like the players that I'm watching kind of carry that with them. I feel like I'm watching the highest level MOBA possible, which is really attractive to me as a StarCraft player, as a guy that I don't really enjoy watching a game that everyone regards as kind of the dumbed-down, easier version of something. I like the more complex versions. So the casters, the game, and the competitions are all great. And then the last thing I would add, too, is that the International is a great event. I do think that these developers are being really fucking stupid, though, by jumping from zero, you know, no tournaments to $1.6 million prize pool. Like,
I was kind of making follow-up of this.
Yeah, I was making fun of the event. Like, you can't go down from there. They're not like, introducing International 3 for $500,000. And you're like, every StarCraft guy would be like, that's a fucking sick prize pool. But the Dota people would be like, what happened? Where is the money? That is ridiculous. $500,000? Why don't I just play for free? And like, it demeans prize pools. So from here, they have to go $3 million and $4 million. And you know what? If they can do that, great. But I think that squelches competition. Like, if I'm looking at Valve and if I'm looking at MOBAs and I'm saying, I want to get in on that, do I host a tournament for $25,000? Does anyone give a shit about that? I think LoL at MLG kind of proved, no, not really. If there's a bigger tournament on the horizon, you're going to poop. You're going to absolutely poop, dump, diarrhea on a tournament.
Let me ask you this, Jeff, because I agree with what Chat's saying in that it could just be $1 million for life. And it could, you know, like $1 million tournaments have never fucked up gaming. Like, I can go back and I can tell you so many big money tournaments that actually never even got the game the exposure that it needed to. Go all the way back to Guild Wars, man. Guild Wars, the original, had a shitload of huge money tournaments and a highly, highly skilled set of teams were the only guys that were ever going to get any piece of that money. You know, you look at Painkiller. It was the exact same thing. $1 million tournament. There was realistically only four guys that were ever going to win that. So, you know, honestly, what would be really sweet is if they supported feeding into these tournaments and, you know, did continue to run them. But I assume that it's not going to make, in my opinion, another tournament, like, not worthwhile because there's still only going to be, like, three guys that can win an international, but...
Okay, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think it's going to, like, hurt the MOBA scene as a whole, and it, honestly, just the fact that Valve is willing to put themselves behind that game to that extent, I think is something that's pretty amazing. Like, they've looked at the whole esports thing. And Blizzard has definitely erred on the side of caution. They're certainly kind of getting their feet wet, dipping their toes in the pond a little bit, seeing where it goes, and then they can build on it from there. So that's obviously like the more conservative approach to it. But, you know, Valve has shown that their game is growing a ton. They're going to support it wholeheartedly, and putting a $1 million tournament up definitely garners a ton of attention from anything else, just mainstream media, mainstream... just people who, it's turning it into like a household thing, you know? I know people who are interested in it and talking about it who had no idea about MOBAs.
Yeah.
And then Greg and Jeff are also both kind of getting interested in the MOBA scene now. Or not necessarily interested, but they're certainly paying attention. It's definitely on the radar.
The one thing that I come back to, and I said the exact same thing at the last International, is like, what next? You know, I was really hoping... Well, no, because I was really hoping that International 2 is actually going to kick off the launch of the game. It sounds like Valve wants to have like a really solid tutorial system in the game, which I commend them for, because it looks like Heart of the Swarm's trying to do that, and it's like an expansion too late, maybe. But you know, there's going to be like just a whole lot of downtime until the next $1 million tournament.
That is like kind of the problem that comes with this. Is what? Well, Valve couldn't really take the approach Blizzard is taking with regard to esports, because Blizzard doesn't have any competition when it comes to RTS. Like, StarCraft II was going to be the RTS unless it fell flat on its face. It didn't matter. Like, no other game was going to push it out. But here we have Riot throwing millions of dollars into LoL in every which way, hosting their own gigantic tournaments and pushing it on tournaments really hard, like including exclusivity stuff.
I have a point on that when you're done, Greg.
So Valve kind of just has to go into it pretty hardcore from the start. And they've decided to do this with the one big tournament, like getting that $1 million prize out there and getting the attention for that. But then that creates the other problem, that then everything else kind of pales in comparison, and they have downtime if they don't keep doing stuff. But they can't really afford to keep doing stuff, because you can't have a $1 million tournament every month. That's not profitable. So the fact that Riot and LoL exists are kind of putting them in this uncomfortable position. But I mean, they're just in beta. They're already beating them in stream viewers for this event, at least. And it feels like the better game from everything I've heard and seen. And the event
it certainly
looks much
is
better.
From a MOBA player standpoint. Like, I would put Dota 2 at number two. Han and Dota 2 are actually extremely similar games. There aren't really that many differences between the two, except for the fact that I just think Han has a much better engine. Everything's way crisper. The micro is more similar to StarCraft 2. Units respond very quickly. When you cast a spell, it happens immediately. Dota 2 is more graphically intense, so like the spells and the animations are a little bit delayed. Auto attacking is a little bit delayed, so it just feels kind of like sluggish, I would say, as a MOBA player. But it's still, as far as balance is concerned, Dota 2 is where it's at. It uses all the original Dota heroes. It's balanced so well. They still use the same hero comps that people used in original Dota from,
tell you
like,
what,
6 years ago.
A lot of people listen to One More Game TV shows, and Inside the Game has a very diverse group of people watching. Mm. If you are like a sultan or an oil guy, and you've just got billions of dollars, I'm waiting for the Middle East response to these MOBAs, and they release, you know, some MOBA game, Middle East classic, for $1 billion and just shit face on all of these silly million-dollar tournaments. And then guess what? Nobody will talk about him anymore. Come down and play. I wanted to make a point about what Greg said about exclusivity. Like, this actually, and this is one of those things where I have to give out my like 15,000 disclaimers because that's where I'm at in my life right now.
Oh god.
Yeah. Get ready for
shit.
It. Here we go.
I'm getting the GG button ready and everything.
I've heard this. I'm pretty sure this is the case. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but it upsets me, so I'm going to share it on my talk show, and everyone can, you know, email me if they think this is a bad idea, whatever. I heard that Riot is starting up their pro league. It's going to have ridiculous amounts of awesome money. It's going to be very supportive for the LoL teams. It's really good.
Yeah.
But if any of the teams in that league have a division of their organization that is either Han or or Dota, they are not allowed to compete in that league. So what that's saying is that Riot is very directly looking to punish organizations for supporting people playing multiple games,
Jeff,
within the same genre,
Jeff,
or beyond.
Jeff, honestly, like, I'm just going to put this out here.
Yeah.
That's the advantage of having a first-party game that people play that you can do whatever the fuck you want. Like, this isn't a tournament using a game. Like, you know, I know it may sound absolutely terrible, but it's like it is their business move. That is a smart fucking business move right there.
I disagree.
It sucks, but it's a smart one.
I think it has the potential to completely fucking backfire on them. I think if I believe your sponsors
how is it going to backfire?
What?
How is it going to backfire?
It's taking a lot of power away from the organizations.
Like, the gaming community is very, very, like, they do not like actions where someone sticks out and just says, hey, fuck that other game, and if you are any part of it, we're going to excommunicate you. You're gone. You don't want to do that with a free-to-play gaming base. Like, they don't have any like, I'm not pot-committed to LoL, you know what I mean? Like, if LoL is painted the bad guy and Riot looks like the dickheads, they could lose a ton of people. A ton of people. And this is all hypothetical. I'm just saying it's dangerous. Why not have the confidence in your product and say, sure, play in our league. Our league's just going to kick the shit out of the other one. So if you want to have a team in that division and waste your money, great. But you don't go above and beyond and say, like, hey, play in our league. And if we hear about you playing in any other leagues, we're going to fucking remove you or you're just not allowed to do it.
That's ridiculous.
Even beyond the PR implications, just the fact that it's going to piss a lot of people off, like, that exclusivity goes both ways. What if teams decide to have Dota instead because they feel it's a better game or they feel it's a more profitable game? Then LoL loses all that support from those teams. And so, like, they could definitely be shooting themselves in the foot, especially given the success Dota just had. And if Dota gets moving, like, if it goes out of beta soon, if the game releases soon.
For the amount of money that they are giving these teams, these players, especially those that haven't necessarily had the opportunity to actually get quote-unquote paid in League of Legends, I guarantee you that many of them would be absolutely fine saying, all right, team, go fuck yourself. I'll make the Dragon Riders, and we'll just be a team that works our way towards the finals. I mean,
but a lot of the big teams, I can't imagine. Dragon Riders. I can't imagine the big teams, like the big multi-gaming teams, being okay with that, and it's pretty important to have their support. Like, they may not be the biggest organization segment.
Who are the teams that this would impact the most?
I don't actually know enough about them.
Well, we don't start getting specific. We don't have a lot of knowledge in this thing, man. We're just trying to be upset about something.
Well, no, they sort of did the same thing with Halo,
CLG.
Right? I mean, we can kind of reference
M5.
CLG, M5, okay.
Navi? Question mark?
I'm not saying it's right, but people need to fucking accept the fact that, like, it's first party. Riot can do whatever the fuck they want because it's their game. And they're willing to put all that money out there.
I'm talking about their game.
Like, don't get mad at me. Get mad at fucking Riot. But I know, but it's actually, like, I know I'm getting beat up for this, but it's like a legitimate business decision for them to just try to bury their competition in that way.
So you think that they're trying to protect their game?
What we're saying,
What's that?
Use your product to bludgeon them over the head and have the better product. Don't, like, just try to drown them in dollars and then force everyone to pick a game. That's well,
I
really,
mean, it seems...
Yeah, I know.
It seems kind of, like, pointless to even, like, acknowledge the other competitions and leagues to such an extent. If you're that confident in your product, it's like... And not only that, losing support of the teams and all the fans and stuff just seems like a added effect that's not necessary. Like, why would they want to induce that kind of wrath from the community?
Yeah, I'm not saying
it's because it's their game. They literally want no one else to play any other game.
Yeah, but we're not saying, well, at least I'm not saying that it's immoral. I think it's actually going to be bad for them. Like, I think they lose too much community support from it because the community will be mad because the community wants to watch all the games, or at least a big segment of it. They don't want an organization to try and stomp the other games that they enjoy. So
it's a huge mistake.
Yeah, pushing Dota out, then you alienate all the Dota fans that cost you potential fans. And then just the fact that you're forcing teams and organizations to choose, a lot of teams might not choose your way. I don't think it's actually practically a good thing. I think there's better ways to go about it, unless their game is actually really shitty, which could be.
Hey, wait.
So...
We should get a drink at the next MLG. Psych, you have a kid and I don't, and I've just decided that everyone with kids can't hang out with us anymore. Now you have to choose between admitting...
What does that have to do with anything? Everybody. What does that have to do with anything? We're talking about a fucking environment where there are two types of tournaments happening right now. There is a tournament that is an MLG tournament, and MLG relies on using these other games in order to hold said tournament. And then you've got the International, and you've got Riot's Pro League. You know, they ultimately... are just using it almost as marketing budget to take market share in the whole MOBA scene. Like, I feel...
Fine. We're just saying we don't think that is the best way to do it. Like, we're not saying they shouldn't be able to do it. We're just saying they shouldn't.
Oh, yeah. They have the right to do it. What we're questioning is that the tactic, which you keep bringing up, is like they have the right to do it. It's a tactic. It's business. We get all that. What we're trying to say is that there has to be, in our opinion, a better way, a more covert way to try and best your competition. It's not like we have this image where it's like,
but
it's
if
like
you
Riot,
control
Riot kind of
your game,
there's Han on the other side.
Then what
like,
is a better
friend.
Way? What is
well,
a better
Han,
way?
Han is like out of the equation at this point. It is
they're
such
holding
a
like
community.
A pee-pee. No, they have the leash. You know, like that monkey leash that you put your.
You guys are fucking idiots in the chat. I'm not saying that it is right. I'm just saying that because they make their own game, they have so much fucking power. Because they are controlling the tournament space.
And we're saying they're misusing the power. This is the wrong way to do
it. I mean, but I'm asking you, like, what is the alternative? Because I don't think they're going to go with any alternative.
Just be the better game and throw the better tournaments. Be the one that everyone wants to watch. Like no one else watches. Like, Warcraft is pretty much dead except for China. Other RTSs you can't even, like, you haven't even heard of. They don't have tournaments except for WCG, which is shit. Like, StarCraft 2 won by being so much better than everything else and so much more well-promoted and by appealing to the tournament organizers and to the players and whatnot. Like, StarCraft 2, Blizzard didn't have to go around saying you can't use any of, like, Command & Conquer
except
or
Brood War.
Whatever.
Wait, I'm going to go pro next time.
Blizzard kind of go in and say you can't.
I'm just curious what the alternative. I don't know that that's.
Well, you're curious. It gets lived out for you every single day. Like, tournaments compete by being the better tournament. Their numbers, they're trying to advertise. You come to us because you want to send them to us. If I have a budget and I'm a multi-gaming team and I'm like, I want to pick up a MOBA team. And I'm like, should it be LoL or should it be Dota? And LoL's tournament's just kicking so much ass that it's pretty obvious I go to that, then okay. Or if Dota's tournament's kicking so much ass, then okay, I go to that. But if I can afford to send him to both, why the fuck is Riot saying, whoa, you can't have a Dota team and send them to tournaments? You have to only come to LoL teams.
I agree.
That's bullshit. Because guess what? Wait, here's the scenario. Hey, look at this. Let's make eye contact. These Han kids, or these Dota kids, I keep saying Han, if they don't have a team to be on, they're on street corners, man. They're selling their bodies in the cold of Chicago nights. They are S&D, man, for Coke money. And then they're taking that Coke money and they're redistributing that out there to younger kids so they can buy more skins for their Dota characters. And it starts the whole cycle over again. And then we have promiscuity at younger ages, which, of course, either leads to more abortions or it leads to uneducated kids spreading drugs and germs around and having more kids that then do the same thing over again, all because Riot decided to try and block out other leagues.
That's
a fucking joke, Wheat. I say get more kids paid to play video games, which encourages them to grow up clean, sober, and happy, get their college degrees, have kids in marriage, and then support their children through their lives through Dota. Amen.
Free to play. I don't know how you can argue with that.
Buy some hats and some couriers. Well, I mean, I'm just as curious as you guys are to see how the fuck this is all going to shake out. I don't
likewise.
You guys have a Dota 2 team, so I guess you're not going to be picking up a league team anytime soon.
Well, EG originally had a Haun team.
We'll dump our Dota team, I guess.
So they realize
there's no other reason to have a LoL team if they can't be in the pro league. So if we do pick up a LoL team, it's like EG announces LoL team and is also regretfully announcing the severance of their Dota squad. Thank you for your time, boys. It just turns out that Valve isn't as good as Riot. It's like,
Wait, didn't really you guys sort of do that with Heroes of New Earth, though? EG picked up Heroes of New Earth team. The Heroes of New Earth game didn't really go anywhere. You guys axed the Heroes of New Earth team.
What point are you trying to make? That we do cut teams? Yes.
Well, no, I'm saying that's, like, you just made a hypothetical, and I'm just saying you guys did that.
The hypothetical is based on a league forcing us to do that. The situation you're talking about is a game not getting off the ground.
Which is definitely, I think, is probably a nail in the coffin, like, for Haun.
Yeah, Haun's done, dude. They don't have the viewership to support these kinds of tournaments. There's no way. Regardless of how good the game is, it doesn't really matter.
A lot of people are like, this is a Kespa-like situation, controlling everything.
Kespa gets criticized for that, man. They're kind of known for that. They're bass.
And somehow they did it without owning the game, which is pretty fucking amazing.
It's kind of ballsy, man.
It's like, get the fuck out. We'll use it if we want to, all right? However, they did build a fucking empire over there. Just saying. All you guys out in the chat that love your Jadong and love your Flash and love your Bisou and love your Boxer and Yellow.
That Isn't that them. Like everyone?
That was them.
Well, yep. they did have allow run Warcraft tournaments back before. Like, Warcraft was shut down by an outside scandal. It was still organizations being dirty, but it wasn't trying to force out competition.
Man, if I was Dota, I would run a campaign that says Riot is just a little bit less bad than Kespa. Or no, Kespa is a little bit less bad than Riot. Shit.
Shit. Any other comments on this? That was kind of an interesting discussion.
Indeed. It's fun.
All right, I've got another item. So we kind of mentioned early on in the show that the Heart of Storm beta, it's like friends and family out. Apparently it's going to be hitting very, very soon. So a lot of information's been leaked, but we haven't necessarily, like, I don't know anyone who's like, yeah, I've played it, it's amazing. It's like, psst, opening up their coat, you know, they got keys and shit. So I wanted to talk about a couple of things that I found kind of interesting. There's been a couple of screenshots, I'll see if I can find them. But it seems like they are adding a few things to bring in those new players that maybe, you know, that maybe were not there in the first place. And one of those examples is like the ability to select all your units, like anywhere on the fucking map. You can just hit whatever.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What? Like a
dump or warp
gates? Yeah. You hit a button, every unit gets selected, every one of them?
Your entire army, regardless of what it's doing. I imagine it's not workers, but anything else, no matter what it's doing, what command it's on.
Isn't there also something that displays workers per, like,
I think so, yeah.
Yes,
per,
worker per
nexus or per, yeah.
There's no worker counting stuff. I haven't seen
I can't, if it does include workers, which I think it should, this should be the buff that Terran has been waiting for the 1-1-1. Like, no more will you have to box and click a screen or two. Now you can just hit fucking A, or no, it won't be A. I don't know.
Why A?
Question mark. That'd be good. It's like the Joker button. I don't know. That doesn't get me that up in arms. It's just the part that saddens me is what that is obviously speaking to, which is very much so trying to make the game easier at the lower level, right? So The only thing that kind of keeps me not super pessimistic about that is that I do think that the new units mostly make the game harder, like we've talked about in the past. But
make it
little
harder.
Things like hitting a button and it selects every unit you have in existence is like, thanks, Blizzard. You know,
well, I think it just kind of sucks because, like, to an extent, it seems like they're headed in the general direction of removing human error, and I think that that's kind of a mistake from like a design aspect.
Like,
I mean, think about it, Greg.
No professional player is actually going to use that. They're like, it's not a valuable thing in competitive gaming.
Well, yeah, what do you hit? It's every like.
That said, though, there's definitely times in games where players will forget a warp prism that's like hovering over dead space, a medevac that's hovering over dead space, something like that. Just forget about a drop, and it's like you can just select everything, bring it all together, and that I think that just sort of removes.
That's so likely to mess up other stuff you're doing on the map. It's not going to make anything easier for a pro player. It's just going to be a nice little thing for casuals.
It's like a secret nerf to Terran, because Terrans are the lazy enough players where they'll actually use it. So you just almost, I don't know. It's just funny. Like, I hope it includes overlords too, so that Zergs can't use it. That'd be sick.
I don't know. I definitely think it has the potential to be used at higher levels. It just sort of depends on the game situation. Like, obviously, if you're attacking two different fronts at once, you're not going to want to select everything and attack one spot, but I think there's time where it could be used.
I'm looking at the, because we were talking about it before the show, the Destroyer and then the, like, Super Creep Spitter.
Destroyer. Oh, no. The
Nidus Destroyer. And then they've got the one that shoots the creep. There's still a lot of talk on whether or not this is in single player.
That looks multiplayer. Yeah, I don't know. That looks questionable.
I think one of the problems they have with the Destroyer is that it looks better than every other Zerg unit in the game, and it it actually only hits buildings. So I don't know. It looks too cool for that role.
I was watching all these videos earlier too. Pretty sweet.
Yeah.
How about them Warhounds, huh?
Oh, my God, man.
Right? Did you play that one yet?
Yeah, I did. I just played that one where they, like, kill 8 billion Xurlings.
Those were Warhounds? I thought those were Battlehellions.
No. There's one that shows Warhounds killing Stalkers.
Okay, let me see.
See if you can find that one.
Warhounds killing Stalkers.
Jeff's going to love
it. So, while we're looking through and looking... Oh, here we go. Okay, I see it. While we're looking at...
Jeff, pay attention.
I'm watching. Also, well, we'll look at this, and I want to hear what you guys are talking about, because I heard that there was some discussion that, you know, you guys might possibly focus a little bit on Heart of the Swarm. So anyway, let's take a look. Here's the Warhounds.
People are already lolling about Warhounds.
I see. Apparently, it has 200 HP at 2 supply.
Oh, that's good times. Times right here.
It's
like
2
mech
supply.
Is already 2. Yeah, that's what people on forums said.
What are they thinking?
Yeah, I don't know. Mech died too easily. Like, the units were too fragile.
What?
How
long do they take to make?
I think, like, one Warhound died against...
One has died so far.
Yeah.
What the hell?
One died.
Yeah.
But, guys, can we talk about the drawbacks to them real quick? Oh, wait. There is none. Especially if you put those in a group with tanks and battle hellions, like...
Yeah, if Terran gets a 200-200 mech, of, like, tech switches and stuff, I don't see them losing.
And we have it on good word. Like, DeMuslim talked to Kim about this. He said that he doesn't want mech to lose if it hits 200-200.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, is
that
that's real?
The way it should be.
Really?
Oh, never mind. He didn't say that. I made that up, and it's not true.
Are you serious?
Yep.
I'm totally serious. It was never said.
Okay. I got you.
Anyways.
Hey, can Warhounds shoot air?
Mm-mm. No, they cannot. Okay.
But they have like a timed rocket.
Not yet. Greg, wait till week 2 of the beta, okay?
The rocket autocast and it hits mechanical.
So Thors are still the only real anti-air. Thors are still the only real anti-air for mech?
Yep. But you're saying that like... It's weird to say Thor is the only anti-air. It's like, well, oh no, they still have to make him. I want it to be on pretty good record that I think if we check the records way back when, I was the first to say that mech, one of the first at least, Mech's going to be completely fucking broken in HOTS. It cannot go through the way it is.
Mech's already broken. It's going to be ridiculous in HOTS.
The only way it could get fixed or not be broken is if Protoss, and the game just stays the way it is, start scanning with the Oracle or whatever it is and using like 10 Tempests across the map to hit and run and just never get touched. Which will make for the worst gameplay you've ever seen in your life. It'll actually be the worst gameplay you've ever seen in your life.
The Oracle's we can talk about the Tempest, too. Fucking 24 range unit or whatever it is.
Did they change it,
the
though?
The Oracle's sick good, too.
Did they?
Yeah, did they reduce its damage?
They reduced damage versus massive. They increased its damage. If that's real, by the way, because one of the things it said in those notes was the new Mothership Core looks ugly or something, which I can't imagine that's real. So I'm thinking it's a troll, but if it's not, it made its attack rate 3.3 down from 6, so it nearly doubled it.
That's pretty big, yeah.
And all it did was it doesn't do bonus damage to massive, but it still does a base damage of like 30, which is more than enough when you're not getting touched.
Yeah, everything is going to be silly and broken at first. Let's just hope they can balance it quickly enough.
All right, so are you guys...
I get an
Idra note, like an Idra patch. I'd like that before an MLG. Yeah. Tempest does like 95 damage and shoots at like 0.1 or something like that.
You make it sound like roaches were supposed to be 3 range. It's like, oh, God forbid they made the tournament fair.
It's just the only joke I was making was that it happened right before the tournament, so it was like...
I'm looking forward to going back to that, having a patch literally before every tournament. Like, I've been playing this game for about 5 days, I'm ready.
Yeah.
That'll be great.
You missed that, yeah.
Can you comment on the whole, I think specifically the interview said Heart of the Swarm could give an opportunity to sort of get familiar with the game while still focusing on macro and other mechanics. Expand on that thought, Idra?
I'm sorry, what?
About playing Heart of the Swarm? Beta, yes. Instead of Wings of Liberty?
Oh, is EG going to be focusing on HOTS?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Originally, I thought I was going to, but November is like a gigantic month. That's 2 months off, and it's going to have 4 or 5 like yearly finals for tournaments in it. So I guess it's kind of going to come down to what the schedule for beta is. Like, if it's going to be a 2-month beta, and it's going to like come out during November, then I'll play some of it. But if it's going to be a long-term thing, if they're aiming for like the 2013 release, then I'll probably keep playing almost exclusively Wings of Liberty until November. Then after that, switch over. I'm not entirely sure. I'd like to play the new game mostly. It's
like,
more interesting.
Like Craig just said, none of what he just said is incorrect or wrong, but the bottom line is that nobody actually has any fucking idea, because
that's true.
Who knows what happens to the state of the game when that comes out. Like, do tournaments just shift? And here's the thing. You can't even ask a tournament this because they don't know. Like, if 100% of the attention shifts to HOTS and nobody gives a shit about Wings of Liberty, we already talked about this. It's going to be like an arms race. You can't be the one league that's like, no. It's still Wings of Liberty because that's the most balanced. They don't care about balance. They care about eyes.
Yep,
and if everyone is doing HOTS and then you're the guy that's trying to run the legitimate Wings of Liberty tournament, you're going to suffer for it. So... what's going to like, I've been asked this, and I was like, no, I'm going to play Wings of Liberty and play very little HOTS. But guess what? Maybe I play all HOTS. Who knows? It's like in complete flux. And the problem is, the answer's out of our hands. It's really in the hands of, like, to be honest, probably the lowest common denominator, like the most people. If everyone shifts to HOTS, and it takes me 8 minutes to queue up on ladder, or no leagues are running wall, then guess what? We're all going to HOTS in a beta.
Well, another thing is viewership. Like, I'm going to be streaming almost exclusively Heart of the Storm, I'd imagine.
Yep.
Unless I feel like I need to practice Wings of Liberty more than that. But Heart of the Storm viewership is... Wings of Liberty is just going to disappear as soon as the beta goes up.
I do agree with that. And it's kind of interesting that streaming would actually affect that meta of what people are playing. But it's true. It's smart.
I think streaming is majority income for almost all pro gamers. Like, very few people actually make more in prize money and salary than they do off streaming, I would imagine. So, streaming is absolutely going to be huge. Absolutely going to be huge in making that decision for most people.
Yep.
Well, Taylor, you came on the call, and the first thing you said was, I can't wait for the Heart of the Swarm beta. I think you drooled a little bit. I had to, like, wipe it off.
I can't, dude.
Are you going to try to go all in or what?
I mean, I'm definitely going to play it, no doubt, as long as it's fun. And I think it's going to be really interesting with all the new units and stuff.
You play Terran, of course it'll be fucking
fun. Oh, yeah, you play Terran. We have no idea what the balance is going to be like.
The exactly. Viper, we have no idea how bad it's going to be.
And so does the Oracle and the Mothership Core. I mean, we have no idea how it's going to play out. I just want to play a few games.
Super fucked up. I can't wait to see what they do with that one. Like,
right?
With what? Yeah,
the Mothership Core, like, it just cannot be a good thing. It's going to be terrible and broken. Like,
I don't see how it works.
I cannot imagine that being a positive part. The Oracle is cool. Like, a lot of things are cool. I like the Oracle and the Viper. Most of the Terran changes feel like they're going to be too good, but they're at least interesting, or they have places in the game. But the Mothership Core just seems stupid.
I think the mines are going to be quite awesome.
Apparently, yeah. Apparently, they're not like spider mines. They just like insta kill, but they're up to 200 damage.
Yeah.
God, I could just imagine.
And they hit air. Beast. And they're the biggest thing.
Well, they take up factory. They take up factory time.
Yeah, but I think you can relocate them.
Craig, so did you use that as like a disadvantage against it?
I think you can
move.
Well,
like, you can't make warhounds. We just saw how fucking good those are. So you got to choose.
That's why everyone goes mech, and then it's like factories for everyone.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of excited for that because I've always been a mech player myself, and I mech like almost exclusively in Brood Wars. So I can't wait.
Hey, I'm excited. I'm gonna go mech too, man. I'll be right there.
Last time, people are saying that. Excuse me, Zerg already have mines, so watch what you're saying. But I don't think they do that much damage.
We can talk about that.
They don't hit air. They cost.
Well, regardless, I really look forward to the upcoming shows that feature. Oh my god, this is the biggest bullshit in this game. Or
I know. Or Artosis this is the can greatest bring thing back imbalance for damn sure.
Yeah.
Good. He's gonna win every tournament not ever made.
Are you gonna go back in, man?
The Panzer Commander, chance,
man.
Yeah.
Just fuck. Fuck everything else. Just go for Heart of the Swarm, dude. You can do it. Let's take a break. When we come back, talk a little bit about we got TSL4 finals this weekend. GSL just resumed. OSL, and then we'll take some phone calls. That sound good? All right, fantastic.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more Inside the Game after this, guys. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dude.
All right, we're back for the second hour of Inside the Game. Oh, did I interrupt the conversation?
No, we were discussing HOTS.
What were you saying? Obviously, some final thoughts?
No, I was asking them if they had played the Heart of the Swarm custom map at all.
Ah.
Blizzard shut it down a couple days before the beta release, but there's a custom map that like you could kind of test out a lot of the stuff, but with weird models.
Yeah, they like recreated everything. It's not like they sort of...
I'm surprised they shut it down. That seems weird.
Yeah, it was pretty... It was actually it was pretty funny at the end of the day. Like the swarm host, like it was like a lurker model from the single player game. But then the little swarms that it sent out were like tiny hydralisks that just like little tiny baby hydralisks. But I have to say, like I actually had a couple buddies play and watch them, and it was pretty good. You know, it's kind of cool to see. I don't know. It's going to take a while, I think, to truly unlock all the possibilities. But anyway, let's quickly talk about what we got going on this weekend as TSL 4, which has been ongoing for quite some time now. It is going to be concluding on Saturday, and I don't think anyone really needs an introduction to this. There are just the four players remaining. The third place match will be a TVT Sting versus Keen, and then Creator versus Life. And really the only thing I wanted to talk with you guys about is the last TSL was sort of a launching point for Naniwa and for Thorzane. And although Creator has been around for a while, Life has certainly kind of hit the scene, or at least has been making more noise as of late. And it's also a PvZ with the two Terrans in third place. I just thought that was kind of funny. So my string of questions is... Another launch pad for these guys. And
I mean, Creator has just been on absolute fire recently. I don't think this is like a, you know, he just destroyed WCS. He did on a roll right now. I don't think this is a launching point for him. Life, I think it would be an upset if he ended up taking out Creator. But I mean, that's the one thing about this this time around with the TSL. There haven't been those awesome foreigner storylines that were, you know, allowing players to kind of blossom and come into the forefront of the scene. And I think that's one of the reasons we sort of touched on this last episode with why this time around the TSL hasn't been necessarily as exciting or hasn't garnered the viewership that I think it was looking for. And I think that's one of the big reasons. I think that as a community grown tournament, it's, you know, it's Team Liquid. I think that pushing through those foreigners is really something important, and it just hasn't had that this time around. The Korean domination has been pretty across the board.
Yeah, this is like the epitome of the whole generic Korean problem. Like so many times you'll see once a tournament gets down to the point where all the foreigners are out, unless it's like MC, DRG, Marine King, one of the Koreans already has a big fan base and actually is personable and likable outside the game. So you lose a lot of viewership. You lose a lot of attention. I didn't even know the TSL finals were going to happen this weekend, honestly. I just like Creator's a really good player. He's gotten a bit of attention. He's performed well before. But everyone else is pretty much just, you know, generic, faceless, really good player. Legitimately good player. Like, they deserve to be where they are. They've won their way through, obviously. That can't be debated. But they're just not exciting. Like, no one cares about them. I can watch the games. Maybe I can learn from it. Maybe I can appreciate the gameplay. But I'm not emotionally invested in any way. And like the general audience is going to be even less so, going to get even less enjoyment out of it. I'm not sure if that's really been reflected in their numbers. I watched a few weekends of TSL, and it seems like they're still getting pretty good stream views.
Yeah.
But there's no hype around it. If Life wins, he's not going to be the next, like, heartthrob. No one's going to watch the TBT at all. If Creator wins, he's going to get a lot of attention, but he already has a lot of attention. I don't think
Hey, now.
It's just, like, it's very underwhelming, in my opinion.
I will watch that TVT through and through.
You'll be the only one.
I'd kind of like DJ Wheat. Do you know who your guest is for Live on 3 tomorrow?
Am I supposed to? Am I the bad guy if I say no?
Put the shield down, first of all, old man. Like, whoa. Corporate Wheat, come on.
No, I mean, I don't know. I have no fucking clue. Like, are you...
Neither do I. That's what I was asking.
Okay.
I was going to say.
I thought you heard something that I hadn't yet, man.
This happens.
This is how it works, man. Someone's like, hey, it's great you got Puppy on the show. I'm like, what
the... You have failed us. You must defend us later. Anyways, the reason I was asking is because for me, I would want to know if TSL is a success in the eyes of the Team Liquid guys, because it kind of depends on what you're going for. Like Greg said, the stream numbers, pretty okay. What's the production value of this? Not very expensive at all. I don't know if they're doing an offline final where they fly in the two guys, but even then, it's at the Team Liquid headquarters. It's not like they're buying a venue and setting up a giant stage and getting booths and stuff. So if they're maintaining 20-ish thousand people on streams for hours every weekend, and they're getting, you know, they get to take this to their sponsors and say, hey, this is the coverage we can give you guys, then mission accomplished. I think in the past, TSL was in a different space. It was where tournaments weren't nearly as frequent. They weren't as high production value. Everything Greg's saying about the Korean finals is absolutely true. It's just a different world right now. Like, we're coming off of one tournament going into the next within a week or two. We don't have to wait several months anymore. We're overfed. It's an insanely luxurious time for tournaments. So
absolutely,
if TSL's happy with this, then more power to them. But if they thought that they were going to be the biggest tournament, then this must be a shock to them.
Yeah, and I think that's where they can like really shine with an invite format to create those foreigner storylines, because it really depends on what they're shooting for. I kind of agree with what you said, Jeff. It's like, are they trying to compete with other tournaments, or are they trying to have this homegrown grassroots thing where they promote foreigners in the scene? And I think if that's what they're shooting for, then they totally missed that this time around. And if they're trying to compete with other tournaments, then yeah, they're going to have to take the numbers, go to their sponsors, and try and do it bigger next time. So I think it just totally depends on which avenue they're shooting for as far as TSL is concerned. And honestly, I don't know.
I've said this in the past too. Like, I was very critical of their documentary. I think rightfully so, and I think Team Liquid would agree with this. The expectation for anything Team Liquid puts their name on is extremely high. So part of the reason why the attitude kind of circling the community about TSL is like, well, it's not what it used to be. It's because, again, we're discrediting the time the two have happened, but the expectation for anything Team Liquid is this is the top shit that is hitting the StarCraft scene. Like, this is the absolute best thing that they are doing. And with TSL, it is not. It is one of the best online tournaments, but everyone already puts an asterisk on online tournaments and says, yeah, but it's not offline, so nobody cares as much.
I think one of the interesting things, as we talked a little bit earlier about Team Liquid picking up the Dota team too, is that them maybe applying the same format to Dota. We talked about what happens next, right? Well, they've shown that they could put together a pretty decent prize pool. I think generally players are going to be completely happy competing in Dota online, and I'm not sure what the implications are if you're, say, a European player or team facing off versus a U.S. team, but I wonder if maybe they could have something side-by-side if they go further. And, of course, you know, what is the reason, as you said, and I'm sure there's many. You know, so there's many reasons.
Yeah.
But that'll be on Saturday. Yeah. Saturday.
Yes.
I don't know how well also their subscription is done, but I have to imagine probably pretty well.
And, yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people just buy the subscription anyway, regardless, just to support TL.
They print money, man. When they make a new shirt or sweatshirt, they sell out in a day at the very most. So yeah. Team Liquid's a successful and awesome business model, and it's all deservedly so. It's not like we can trace it back to like some ridiculous, stupid thing that happened, and they don't deserve it. So,
and I love the fact
I just want them to do better.
I also love the fact that like TL has kind of stayed true to their roots. They haven't really tried to monetize the community per se, and I think that's really cool. It's kind of stayed community-centric, community-focused, and I think that's what it's all about, and they realize that. So I think they're okay with really any results that they get, because from their point of view, it's all about the community, and I love that.
Want to talk a little bit about GSL? That shit's heating up. Are you guys back on track for watching it?
We were at PAX, so I think I've seen the results. Like, Symbol made it through last night, and I forgot what happened.
Hero.
I'm not really caught up. Hero made it through?
Hero and Symbol.
And if you haven't seen it, well, then fuck you. You just got spoiled. There's nothing you can do about it. but that is true. There it is. Group A and B came out. I don't know if there's necessarily any... Super, well, I mean, Parting was eliminated. That was pretty It's like a pretty big deal, or drop down rather.
Sorry for anyone that I did spoil it for, by the way.
Did we mention Mana making it through?
I know.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that last week after the Destiny's penis thing, because remember everyone was upset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you gotta stop taking so many spirit walks, man. Your memory's starting to wander.
Spirit walks.
Group C, I think, is tonight, if I'm not mistaken. MC, Jadon, Curious, and Marine King. I'd have to say it's probably the group that I'm just most...
No, I think OSL's tonight, isn't it? Oh, yeah, GSL is.
That's something we can talk about. What's up, my brothers?
What's up? Talk about it.
Moltrap and Grubbitsters.
Oh, I didn't get to watch it.
Have they already casted a match? Either.
Yeah.
What are we going to talk about if you haven't watched it, Jeff?
That it happens?
Let's have an in-depth conversation.
And I had a biz call with Riot. I couldn't watch it.
Oh, shit. I don't know. What was the general consensus on that?
I guess the topic would be Grubby is, certainly there's been a few players. Obviously, I'm on that list of people that have been playing and then also commentating. But Grubby, I think, is the highest in terms of, like, highest skill, but then also going to the biggest league with the most time commitment, which is kind of a weird way to describe that he's, like, he's a top 8 tournament caliber player, if not a winning tournament caliber player, who is now casting full time for arguably the biggest or second biggest league on the planet. And I think that's a interesting transition that, honestly, I expected a lot more buzz. Like, there's definitely been threads about it. People are talking. They're really excited. People love his commentating, which is cool. He's a great commentator.
Yeah, I think he does a good job.
But not what I thought. I thought Grubby going to OSL would be like the top 10 threads on Reddit were just beside themselves with excitement.
Is this true that OSL is?
So what are the casting pairs going to be now?
Is Moltrap and Grubby for OSL? Like that's
what about what about Doa?
No, he's having health problems and stuff, so he couldn't go over.
Oh, well,
for the time being.
Hmm.
It saved him from working with Moltrap again.
That's interesting because I'm starting up casting at IGN again in regards to him going to OSL.
Oh, you didn't get that memo? No, he's going back to IGN.
They fired you.
Interesting.
An Inside the Game special. Pain user, quick, zoom in on your face.
Interesting.
I wanted a job.
Well, I mean, we'll see how it plays out, but I know that there's not a necessity for 4 full-time casters at IGN, and that was the original issue, and I'm pretty sure he's taking off to Korea at some point, but...
He might not be working with IGN anymore either.
He had to get his gallbladder removed, I think.
It blew up, according to Chap.
His gallbladder blew up?
Apparently. I didn't know
something.
They did that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. I saw him for lunch, like, I guess, like, a few days before that happened. And
what'd you give him?
He seemed fine. I certainly
he really
didn't
wanted that cat
his food or anything.
Adding his name to the conspiracy.
But anyways, I always thought it was going to be him and Moltrap again. But as Idris said, it spares him from working with Moltrap.
Well,
I suppose
they couldn't get Doa, so they went up with their backup, Grubby.
Interesting.
Jeff.
Interesting.
Oh, shit. Alright.
I don't know, yeah, I guess since none of us watched it, we don't have any topic, but yeah.
I have to catch up, man. I mean, like, what can you do when you're traveling and shit?
Like, I saw that MVP beat Baby, which is revenge from WG Korea, so there's a storyline.
In what?
In OSL. Yes, OSL.
I wasn't looking at the OSL stuff yet. Apparently, I have to pay for the VODs now. I did not know this.
That is some shit.
Like, when the fuck did this change, man?
Well, their VODs were set up really poorly before anyway. It was all, like, fragmented.
Still was able to watch them, man. They might have been 4x3 fucking in most horrible bitrate. Actually, that 4x3 is insane. I just cannot believe that we're not in the 21st century as far as StarCraft II VODs are concerned, but...
Well, most leagues are.
They said next year Like, I think Korea forces HD next year, like a couple years.
It's really
technology's not there yet.
Yeah, apparently they can have like the most baller fucking internet in the world. But you guys want to take some phone calls? We got about 40 minutes left. Do it. 40 minutes left. You can Skype us, DJ Wheat, telephone 909-581-8519. And let me get my Skype here. Any other topics that we missed today?
I don't think I would just encourage the people who call in to remind us if we have.
There you go.
About what?
Because we were traveling, so we were that lazy.
If we've forgotten any topics, they could ask us about it. Right.
I mean, this has been like one of the few weeks with not a ton of tournament action.
There was other stuff going on for once. Yeah, we got Kevin on the line. Hello, Kevin. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. What's going on? Just wanted to say thanks for taking the call.
No
problem. I had a question regarding your comments for the tuning for Heart of the Swarm and how you guys were seemingly concerned about all of the tuning down towards, you know, noobs, if you will. But the thought occurred to me that, you know, while pro players account for 99% of the non-player eyes on the game, aren't you only 1% of the player base or less? And doesn't Blizzard make more money off of the players than they do off of the viewers? So wouldn't they want to tune it down?
Go ahead, Jeff.
If you are asking, are we a part of the 1%? The answer is yes. Now, the next question you should ask yourself is, do you want this game balanced towards the T-ballers? Okay? Do you want the game set up on a little shaft, softball, bigger bats, kids running around with giant heads and helmets, and they're falling over, and the parents are lobbing it. Oh, go, you're doing so good. Good job. Or do you want it Major League Baseball style, with big ass, you know, great pants, top dollar uniforms, fantastic fucking level of play? That's my question to you, sir.
I mean, I'm talking from a business standpoint for Blizzard.
From a business standpoint, I feel like regardless, Blizzard, yes, makes a vast majority of its money off of the 99% player base. But that being said, the 99% player base is going to deal with balance that's ushered down from the top 1% regardless. No. It's not like...
Well, hold on.
I was giving a joke answer. The honest answer is you're absolutely correct. Most of this game needs to be more accessible than Brood War. Brood War is so fucking hard that it literally intimidated people. So at the end of the day, it became a spectator sport that very, very few people played and a lot of people watched. Is the climate adjusted to that in this modern day for gaming? The answer is no. Most people, if they knew the game was absolutely fucking impossible to play, would not buy it, which means Blizzard, that literally prints subscription money out of their ass for WoW, one of the easier games to play, would move to a different business model. So yes, you need the game to walk a line. It has to be both accessible and rewarding to newbies that are going to be your major purchasing base, but you also need to make it competitive enough where it's going to field a group of players that play at a level different from everybody else, worth watching. If I'm a newbie and I watch a professional player play, and I go, well, I can do that, and then I can, there's no real reason to watch that, and it deteriorates from the overall fan base. So that's the line they're walking. So yes, you're going to get little things like up until Masters League, you don't know how many games you've lost because your feeble brain can't accept that. You just win games. You only win. It only shows the wins because that's all that actually matters. You don't know how many games you lost. You only win. So you're going to get little weird balance things like if you hit the W key, it accesses all your warp gates, or if you hit the fucking question mark, you get every unit you've ever made.
Which Jeff, then the real question, right, is is there ever anything that can affect the pros or that level of game by making it easier? You know, like you guys mentioned, you said, I don't think that is necessarily going to have an effect on a pro being able to play better if they just grab all their units.
Of course, those things affect the pros. I think Blizzard's doing the best job possible of roping in the most people while still making a hard enough game that it's engaging on the professional level. Greg and I and Painter would tell you this game would do awesome to be more difficult because the better players would rise up even higher and we'd get to honor them more. But the balance Blizzard's walking is they want this game to be both easy enough so that an amateur bronze player could grab this game and have fun with it, but also hard enough where that same bronze player can get enjoyment from watching the professionals play. And yeah. I think they're doing a good job of walking that line.
Go ahead.
I think people kind of overestimate how toned down it actually has to be for the casual players and whatnot. Like, RTS has a big learning curve just because of the way things work. You have to learn a lot of stuff to do it. It's not completely intuitive to execute. That's always going to be the case. That's why StarCraft II is never going to sell as much as the new Madden or whatever. And companies that make RTSs, they know that. And I think they also know that, you know, whether or not you have that the entire army button, that's not actually going to make that big of a difference for how good a bronze player is at the game or for how frustrated they are. And they did put that in, but there's also a lot of other things like that they could put in that would make it more newbie-friendly. And if you take the argument the caller presented, like, all the way through, then you say, why don't they do that? Why don't they just make it as easy as possible? A lot of those things don't actually matter that much for the casual player's enjoyment. They're either not going to be aware of the difference, not going to be aware of what they're missing because they're actually so bad, and like,
Why, hello there.
Hello, sir.
Sorry about that, guys.
No problem, man.
It's just usually
when that happens, it's like someone at the lair.
It was definitely me. I heard you guys go, oh my god, I can't, what happened? Did we lose him? And then suddenly it was all back. But
Greg, you're making a really good point, though. I think it was, what was the last thing you heard, Weed?
The last thing I heard was, Or did anyone else lose Weech call? Something like that.
Oh, you heard us say that?
Yeah.
Shit.
It was kind of weird, man. It was a little creepy.
Dude.
It was a little creepy. But do you want to just kind of close your thought, Idra, and we'll take another caller. Sorry about that caller, but hopefully.
I was basically just saying that, like, people overestimate what needs to be done to satisfy casual players, particularly in something like an RTS. Like, there is a tipping point, and it does affect some. Like Jeff said, Blizzard just has to walk the line. But a lot of the time, people actually won't be aware of the things that competitive players talk about. And if they are, then they're already getting to the point where competitive play matters to them, so they want it to be harder for the pro gamers as well. So I think people kind of overestimate how good it is for casuals to have some of these dumbed-down effects.
Another thing is like, what are they trying to do exactly? Are they trying to close the gap between the casuals and the professional players by adding these functions that make it easier for the casual players to maybe compete on that level? Because from my standpoint, I feel like matchmaking as a whole kind of solves that problem for them to an extent. They're playing against other bronze players. They're playing against people at their level. So if they're putting in these changes in order to allow them to compete with players at a higher level, from a game development standpoint, that just seems like something that's completely unnecessary.
I don't think that, like, it's possible to allow them to suddenly be like, just by using this Alt F1, you now can defeat guys two levels ahead of you. I think
what's the point exactly? Part of it's
just the frustration of actually executing. Like, imagine going back to Brood War and trying to macro relative to macroing with StarCraft 2. Like, that's just a lot harder to do. And someone who's not accustomed to RTS and has different standards for the execution of a game, they're going to find that really boring and really off-putting. So, yeah, again, it's just finding a balance. But I could easily see an interface being so frustrating in order to make it difficult to make it a good skill-based game that it's then really annoying for casual fans to play.
It's all about barrier of entry, man. Like, how many people have you ever talked to who is like, yeah, I really would like to get into StarCraft, but it's just too hard. Or I don't have enough time to put into it. And I think these little tiny things, I mean, go so far as, I don't know if you've noticed in some of the commercials, like the right click, left click, you know, a move, like, this is how, I mean, little things like that I think a lot of people take for granted might be just what is needed to get that sort of, I know what I'm looking at, but I don't know how to move anything or do anything.
It's a good question. I think we'd all agree that Blizzard's doing a good job of making the game as easy and hard at the same time as they possibly can.
All right. Next caller, let's take Tristan's call. Hello, Tristan. Welcome to Inside the Game. Hello, Tristan. That guy sounds oddly like me.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Oh, hey, Tristan. Ah. Hello. What's up? Okay. Don't listen through the stream. Listen through Skype, buddy.
All right. Sorry about that. Is Stefano going to EG?
I'll take that one.
Okay, because I don't know.
The answer is,
I don't
Do you know Stefano's not on Millennium anymore?
Oh. Actually, it's a good question, though, because don't tell anyone this, but Alex Garfield actually gave me clearance to wait for a caller to call in inside the game, and if they ask if Stefano has joined the team, I get to answer it. So,
all right, there you go, Tristan. Thanks. All right, well, I don't know if he actually thought he was going to get an answer, but area code 262, hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, shit. Hi, I had a question about a couple episodes ago. You spoke about Blizzard needs to implement sponsor-friendly
right,
things,
like,
so to style
right.
as the banners, everything of that nature. Why does Blizzard have to implement that? Why isn't that something tournaments are doing? Why isn't that something the teams are doing?
Because
why
do you realize what you'd have to do in order to
yeah,
make, like, yeah.
The teams don't have control over the platform.
Hold on.
The game is the platform. The teams and the tournaments have no control over that.
Let me
they can't implement that.
30 possible maps of every single possible team. You know, like, how are you doing that? Unless someone was to make a map specific to saying this player put in this branding or whatever. Like, I don't think that's realistic. I think that Blizzard puts the support in there, and then all the other tournaments use it.
Well, I mean, the other side of it too is it's almost a philosophical thing. Like, a lot of tournaments, in order to get their ROI, they don't spend time advertising for the teams and the players that are in their tournaments, but rather they advertise their own sponsorships, their own interests. So their overlays are dominated not by, like, they're not going to make 35 overlays for all the professional teams attending an MLG,
yeah,
right? Nobody expects that. And
it's like the game. Yeah, that.
We'll go on to the next call.
The onus is definitely on Blizzard for that one.
It's on Blizzard, man. I agree.
No doubt about it.
Area code 765. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good, how are you, dude?
So, pretty good. So I have kind of, it's a two-part question, but really it's a combination of people streaming right now. So like, for example, Violet's streaming right now, and I was curious how important it is to a pro gamer and really the manager of the team to potentially scout some things like that. I mean, do you think that's going to be something that comes into play in time?
You mean like team captains or team recruiters actually using the stream to scout? Is that what you're talking about?
He means like preparation for tournaments.
Yeah, so like one thing, I guess the biggest thing that I thought about this for was Stefano recently when he went to Korea, he practiced for like 10 or 12 days, and then he completely disabled VODs. So no manager, no player, no one could really watch what he was doing. Obviously, they could have watched the stream live, but if they didn't catch it live, I mean, essentially they can't see what that player is doing. Do you think that that's important from a pro player's perspective, and do you think that that's important for a team to potentially manage that and watch the players coming forward, like for scouting and things like that?
Oh, sure. Like, anytime you can get more information about your opponent, that's a really good thing. But then it just comes down to volume. Like, we have a very limited management team. We can only watch so many hours of gameplay from so many players. And if we have 7-8 people going into a tournament, some people in the open bracket, everyone else in different groups, like, that's a lot of stuff that you would actually have to prepare for. And then if you compare tournament games as opposed to those ladder games, if you're looking at, like, recent tournament performances and how they played in important matches, it's much more representative of how they're likely to play against you in upcoming matches. So it's better to spend your time on that. So, like, in a perfect world, sure, you sit down and watch the stream every time your next opponent's going to play, but it's just not really practical.
And I think generally, like, those things tend to sort of work their way through the community relatively quickly. When a player starts taking big tournament wins off notable players, I think it's a combination of both. Like, generally a player, if you take Suppy, for instance, he was doing outstanding on the North American ladder. He had a great MLG run. He had a few really good online tournament runs as well, and that kind of just, like, permeates its way through the community. Then you get, say, you know, EG's manager, Cody, taking a look at him with a spotlight, kind of following his progress, and then you can just sort of take it from there. So I feel like talent in SC2, especially really outstanding talent, finds its way.
It does. It finds its way.
Yeah, very quickly.
So how important do you think that is then for the player to kind of control how much anybody sees them? So, I mean, there's a lot of big name players. I mean, you look at somebody like Korean, like DRG or MVP or something like that. They don't really show any of their games. I mean, you don't really have a chance to see their games. Every now and then DRG streams, but that's about it. So do you think that that helps? Obviously, they don't get any income. So that
but their matches are all the most broadcast matches on the planet. Like,
yeah,
what they do is seen. I mean, there's no question about it. If you are, like, in a perfect world, like Greg said, you wouldn't stream any of your games, and you'd be completely insular, and all your training partners would be very secretive, and they wouldn't tell anyone. But in this day and age, if Stefano streamed 50 hours in a month, he could make $10,000-$15,000. Like, he could make just a ridiculous amount of money. And also, he gets exposure, he remains relevant. Like, that's how people supply them their abilities to be professional players. That's how talent gets recognized. Like, it's there's just too many pros to it to not do it. And until there's a time where people are being paid a living wage to play this game solely to win and nothing else, streaming is going to always have a place for those players.
Do you think that'll ever happen?
It could. I mean, if you were to, like, right on the spot, tell me, is it going to happen? Yeah, I think it could happen.
I think it's
a matter of time.
Not to bring up... For some people,
it's already true. There are people, like, that's what the Koreans do. The Koreans get paid solely to win. Like, DRG doesn't have to stream to support himself. He's given a team house and all the like food and everything else he needs to live. And then he's also paid a salary. And all he has to do is win tournaments and win matches. So it's just a matter of that extending down more and more. Because, like Jeff said right now, that's how you get picked up. That's how you get attention. Because you're not going to go to an MLG and just win it as an unknown player. It's much easier to get attention through a stream. And then for the mid-level players, just like you're still not valuable enough to be supported solely off playing. And streaming is one of the biggest ways to get revenue. So it's just it's a balance of pluses and minuses. And right now it's much more valuable for most people to stream than to be completely hidden as a player.
But I want to say, too, even with Dong Regu, like Greg just said, I want this to be known so that people don't sweep this under the carpet for the players that do stream for their wages, because I'm sure Dong Regu does get a salary, like Greg says, but it is one-third of what you think it is. It's one-fourth of what you think it is. And he is amongst maybe literally 12 Koreans that have a living salary in Korea. It is not a lot of players making money. So if you do see a player streaming, it's because they need to do that to create some kind of situation for themselves. Like, Koreans normally get they get a house, they get food, like Greg said, and they get travel. And that's about it. For more players than you think, they do not have a salary.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's the situation we're in right now. So if you see a player streaming and it's like, well, gosh, wouldn't it be just better if they didn't stream so that all their games are secret? Absolutely it would be better. But that person's trying to make a living because the situation they're in right now is if they're not pro gaming, they're kind of fucked. They don't have any security.
So there's a lot of rumors going around, though, that people, like, just because Stefano is up for grabs right now, people post all the time that it wouldn't be, it could be practical that he could make up to 6 digits as a salary. I mean, I wouldn't think that would even be feasible right now in any market, whether that be Korean or the foreign scene. Is that, like, realistically, I'm not asking how much you make, but is that something that's in the realm of possibilities right now? I mean, somebody making $50,000 to $100,000 with...
Yeah. Alex Garfield has come out and said that he pays some players 6-figure salaries. It is. In Brood War, there was players making that much money as well. In Warcraft 3, there was players making that much money. Like, if a guy has a fan base, he wins tournaments, and he's, hitting, like, legendary status, they're worth that kind of money.
Okay, well, thanks for the time, guys.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care, man.
Yep.
Peace. I got Heart of the Swarm, man. It's the servers aren't up, but it looks like it's hitting everyone's accounts right now.
Really?
So
time to end the show then?
I don't know. No, the servers are down, so you can't actually log in. But I can confirm that on my StarCraft 2, it says Heart of the Swarm SC2-1 beta, right in between the two Wings of Liberty. Once.
I don't have it.
Really?
Maybe I finally talked enough shit about Blizzard.
Apparently, people are saying that they're just literally popping in. So I didn't see an email or anything. It just was there. So
it's just where?
I still can't log in.
Just go to account, but I don't have mine yet.
Yeah, you go to account, and then it says, you know, let's see. It has all this, like, info that I don't necessarily want to show, so. But yeah. Goatlust, anyone? Or is it too early? It's too early.
Let's take a couple more. It's too early. Look at you just jumping the gun. Good lord.
I just saw his name pop up, man.
He has to start calling now.
Yeah.
It's 20 minutes before.
God, he does. He has to get it going. Ooh, I like this name, Dave Creamer. Dave, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey there. Nice to talk to you guys. I was basically wondering...
I've watched your videos on YouTube.
Yes, you have.
Okay. What's up, Dave? What's up?
Not too much. And I appreciated your comment on that as well.
Oh, no
you,
problem.
You and Jen. I was basically wondering, a lot of people talk about what do you think the tournaments are going to do when Heart of the Swarm comes out. I was wondering, with you guys, what would you like them to do? What do you think the best rollout for you as a player would be for you to incorporate that into your schedule and then have a tournament come out?
I think the timings are actually going to work out really well. Like I said, November is the finals for a lot of things. MLG Dallas, although it's not like a national finals like Providence was last year, it's the last championship of the year. DreamHack is doing their finals at the end of November. IPL5 is happening end of November or early December. Just everything is wrapping up for the year. And it looks like it'll be feasible to have a Heart of the Swarm release in December or January, or at least early next year. So like all the tournaments are ending. I think they should just finish out on Wings of Liberty and then start up Heart of the Swarm tournaments next year as soon as release happens.
I was also kind of wondering, do you think this will be a little shift in what type of player is good? Like I noticed, as I think Jeff mentioned earlier, this may make it harder. A lot of the things are like caster units.
I think it'll be the Terran players that are good.
Well, I know you would say that, but I meant creative type players, like let's say a TLO or someone that's just kind of more on the fly versus a very mechanical player that's maybe good once strategies are established. Is it just this going to favor like an MC or is this going to favor
I certainly hope it's the former. I certainly hope that creative players are rewarded in Heart of the Swarm. That's definitely when I found the game the most fun, is in the early stages of StarCraft II when people were still making up build orders on the fly. Nothing was set in stone. You could kind of...
Oh, Pager.
That was when it was the most fun for me, to be honest. Once everything got kind of ironed out and set in stone, it just it detracts from the creative aspect of the game when you can't be rewarded for sort of making up a build. And I think that if they do reward that in Heart of the Swarm, that's certainly where I hope it's headed.
I mean, to answer your question, I think as long as you're using SteelSeries peripherals, Kingston RAM, Intel motherboards, and drinking enough Monster, you should be fine.
All right, fair enough. Dave, all right, thanks.
Thanks for your call, man. Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's the...
What's that guy's YouTube, dude? What kind of videos does he make?
He makes some really funny videos, man. You should watch him. I'll send you some links. He made one a while ago. Let's take another call here. We've got Lebo on the line. Hello, Lebo. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Wait, what?
Lebo?
Oh, hello. Hi?
Wait.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Did we alarm you in some way?
Oh, no. I was just wasn't expecting it. All right. Oh. So, hi. I'm Lebo Xenocider Chang. Oh, Jesus. What was I going to say? All right. So, I have a question to Idra. So I have a similar mindset, so I have a similar mindset like you, that people, like, shouldn't cheese or whatever, and that people that make bad decisions or whatever are, like, I don't know, it's kind of irrational. Like, I play 4GG on ladder, and, like, he'll do a timing that doesn't make any sense at all, and it'll win because I'm not expecting it. Like, do people do that in tournaments at the high level, or is it just on ladder?
Yeah, they do it in tournaments, too.
You just asked if, like, you played 4G, you know that he's a tournament player, right?
Well, I mean, like, I don't know. I just, I don't know if people do those weird timings in tournaments either.
Do you
4G is so not very cheesy either.
You just play StarCraft, you never watch it?
He's pretty solid. all around.
Playing 4GT, I don't know. He has some really weird timings.
Hmm. This call's a weird timing. Lebo, thanks for your call, man. Yeah, you should check out some. You should check out some VODs and stuff. All right. Let's take another caller. Erica, yep. 701. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, hello, Marcus Graham. Big fan of everybody here. I've been a fan of you since Pegcasting and whatnot.
Thanks, man.
I got a question. Yeah, man, of course. I hope you stay in eSports forever. I've got a question regarding the streaming topic. So, like, long story short, when I see somebody, like, a live streaming, I call my friend over and I'm like, hey, we're not playing Marvel vs. Capcom 3 tonight, a live streaming. Because it's a really big deal to see these professional Korean players stream, you know, when you see, you know, crazy Marauder splits targeting, you know, Viking against Colossus and stuff like that. What I want to know is the Korean show Baneling that GFL does, they're talking about the disadvantages of the professional streaming, and I want to know what you guys think about that. And it's basically they're just saying, you know, the more they stream, the more they let their strategies out there, and then the more susceptible to losing to their opponents in the future.
Yeah, I think that there. I mean, I would just comment that I was going to say this earlier, but we kind of went a different way. But you know, other games we've seen top level streamers pretty much just stop, like go radio silent as a result of teams obviously reading their strats and them counter picking, you know, to directly beat them. This happening more in team games, but. I mean, you guys have kind of talked about it already, kind of like gone around the bush a few times tonight, but it just doesn't, at least in this day and age, like, people are probably watching streams to figure out strats, but I don't know. I mean, I think if people don't want to see their strats, they just stop playing.
If you're making enough money and you're winning tournaments on a regular basis, you should not stream. If you want to continue to grow your fan base, expose yourself at the cost of your opponents having more information on you, then you stream. So right now, with the way the professional scene is set up, most people stream because the benefits outweigh the cost. And
yeah, I heard you guys. Sorry about that. I heard you guys talking about that earlier. Basically, you know, the people that make enough money, you know, are the ones that tend to stream less, and the people that need a bit more fan support and a bit more salary or income, they try to stream more. I guess my second part of the question, and then I'll let you guys get on with the show, is if you had to weigh the benefit and the con of the player streaming, because to the fans, me, like I said, I see a live stream, everything drops. I see Bomber stream, everything drops. I mean, we know Bomber style, which is Matt Barracks and Matt Command Center, because there was a time and period about 6 months ago where Bomber was streaming every night, and you got to see this really high-level StarCraft player, which was awesome. But then all of a sudden he stopped streaming, and now I'm looking around, I go, well, I don't want to watch this guy on Masters NA Karen because he whines about balance that he's not as good as Alive. So I guess I just want to know whether you think the players, you know, fit the up and down of it, I guess, besides the salary.
Well, I think one thing to note is that you might be like a small demographic of viewer. Not everybody just watches to see the pure top skill level players. Most players do, but a lot of fans like connect with specific streamers, and then they get a lot of viewers. Like some streamers will commentate while they play, and that attracts a lot of viewers. They'll like explain their train of thought while they're doing stuff. Some people have a lot of like stream interactivity. They talk to a lot of people in chat. I think Maximus Black would be an example of someone who does that and gets a lot of viewers that way. So I think it kind of just totally depends on what the viewer's looking for. But in your case, I think a lot of those guys don't want to stream too much because, for one, I think the more people like that stream, probably the less exciting it is when they start streaming. Like you said, when they start streaming, you just drop everything and watch them. If they were streaming all the time, maybe it wouldn't be as exciting for you. And then also people can figure out their strats and like their standard styles of playing and stuff like that. So I don't think they want that out there.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. We got to start wrapping up. Appreciate it. Have a good night, man. All right. Let's take Goat Lust's call.
Do it.
All right. Hello, Goat Lust. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up, buddy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not a whole lot. How are you, you fellas doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, man.
Good, man.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
Good to hear.
Does anyone else hear an echo, or is it just me?
Yeah, I do.
I don't.
Where
I think
the fuck
it's
is it coming from, man?
I don't know.
What? I don't know.
Everything
it
says
just,
is
like,
fine.
Just, like, came out of nowhere. It was before you came on, Goatless. Don't worry, I'm not.
All right, yeah. I was just kind of shitting myself. I thought I'd fucked something up. But
nah,
yeah.
I would have called you a cunt and let you be on your way, but that didn't happen, so. What's up,
man? A shit cunt.
Yeah, shit cunt. That's the one.
Shit
all right.
Cunt.
So the topic of devs sort of pouring money into esports is a big thing lately with, you know, Valve having their 1 mil tournament around this time of the year. And I'm just wondering what you guys think about the microtransaction model and, like, how much of an effect that is having on, you know, how much League of Legends and Dota are, you know, throwing money into esports because, you know, they've only got to get someone interested enough to try a free game and then, you know, they'll probably buy a skin somewhere down the road. Do you think this is, like, a big part of why they're throwing more money? Because, you know, they don't have to get some person
interested. Those guys, I'm going to measure it using my arms and words at the same time. They make a fuckload of money, man. A fuckload of money. And the one thing about being free to play is that there's no reason not to download the game and try it. That's why I wish in my heart of hearts that StarCraft II would be free to play. Because I think you'd get those people that are like, I'm not going to pay $50. Like, that's a fucking ripoff, man. Fucking play some free to play games. Those guys make a shitload of money. So, you know, yeah, it has a huge amount to do with them putting into it. Because it's marketing. Jeff, you what, Jeff?
No, I... Sorry. Yeah. Thank you. Stretching.
You, oh, you wish it was free to play too?
No, not at all.
No, you really don't?
No, I think there should be that barrier that keeps the StarCraft crowd pretty hardcore.
I don't know, because I think we have a separate... Like, the competitive... I can't tell if you're trolling, but, like, the competitive...
Yeah, I can't either.
Competitive community is, like, separate enough. Like, I don't think... It's not like, how often do you interact with a bronze player who doesn't like esports? Like, the only way you interact with them is if they're watching a stream or buying a lesson from you or something. Like, we don't hit them on the ladder. We don't have to interact with them at all. Like, it's just more people to potentially become real parts of the esports community. And I really agree. I think it should be free to play. I think they should monetize it later on because I've seen stats like the average LoL player pays more for the add-ons for the microtransactions within a month or two than the game would initially cost if it weren't free to play. I don't know, it just seems like a much better business model, both for esports, for making esports successful, marketing and advertising for the game, and then for the game developer too. Riot is obviously swimming in money. They can afford to keep throwing this much at esports. Like,
yeah.
I definitely feel it's better for esports, and I think it might be the better model overall for a lot of games like this.
I think if we were to get one, guys, it would be a free-to-play game with a monthly subscription is the model that they would do, and they talked about that, and I don't know. I'm just not interested in it. I want to pay for my game, and then I want to play the game.
I think Blizzard's headed towards a combination of both in the future. I mean, I know they have plans in development for the Blizzard Dota, and they're definitely going to try and take a chunk out of the MOBA market with Blizzard Dota. And I'd imagine they're going to go free-to-play with that as part of the StarCraft engine. I'm not sure how they're going to monetize it, and I would hope that they find a way to maybe do maybe a half and half with Heart of the Swarm. So, like, a more reasonable, cheaper initial cost for the game, like maybe somewhere between $10 to $30 or something like that. And then also have microtransactions in the form of skins, single-player add-ons,
capes,
things like that. Yeah, whatever. Superman.
I think we should take it to the next level, though, where on a competitive level, there's microtransactions. So, like, stims cost $250. You actually pay for a siege tank.
It
like
could
a siege
literally
tank
be
$1.
Stim to win. Yeah.
And that would make things so much more interesting. Like, if you fucking nuked an army, it's like a $30 army, you can see that player. Or, like, you have, like, a high roller situation where these guys are playing, but it's
it's not microtransactions. Like every stim is $5,000.
I wish just Marines would run out of bullets, man. It would be like a glorious day if they're just like firing away, stutter stepping, and then they just.
How about integrated money matches? I think that would be awesome.
I believe that's illegal.
Well, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah, why would that be illegal?
Actually, I don't know. Some of those, all the online gambling laws and stuff that affect poker, and I don't know.
Although they did bring online poker back, they came to some sort of an agreement. I think PokerStars is coming back.
Let's not do definitely. This. Jesus Christ. To answer your question, Goatless, in my personal opinion, I think because the MOBA community kind of established that their games are going to be free to play, and then, I mean, at least the successful MOBAs, and then they're going to move towards microtransactions, that, you know, there can be all kinds of metrics coming out saying that people overall spend more money in a month than just like the $60 chunk or $50 chunk you normally would for the hard copy of a game, or I guess digital as well. There's no distinction there. But I think that's almost like a cultural expectation. Like they're in there, and that's where they have to go from now. And it's obviously successful. It's obviously great. But I don't think, and again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think Blizzard's doing just fine with their sales as well. And it's a completely different business model. And certainly what Idris is saying and others, like, would it rope in more people? Would it bring in more people? Would that be a benefit? Absolutely. But I don't know if Blizzard is possibly going to rework their entire business model for something they already have established and it's already adequate.
That said, I think, like, a counterpoint to what you just said is how much of Blizzard's success can we attribute to the fact that they have this ridiculously long legacy of successful games that you need to pay for, and they have a gigantic fan base that moves with them on every game. Whereas if you look at Riot, it's kind of an upstart thing that's incredibly successful without that huge legacy behind the company. And I think you have to attribute some percentage of Blizzard sales to that legacy. I don't know what
Absolutely.
It is.
But
Riot's kind of like a new drug, though, too. Like, right now, obviously, they're doing... Nobody would look at Riot and be like, they're not doing that great. Obviously, they're doing fucking amazing. But the question on everyone's mind is that, is where, you know, with their business plan and how aggressively they're adhering to it, does it have the longevity that it needs? I mean, a lot of the questions people ask is, okay, it's free to play. That's obviously working out. You're pumping in a lot of money into the game. It doesn't really create that loyalty that you're talking about with Blizzard, in my opinion. Or at least that's the potential. There's the danger that it doesn't create that loyalty. Maybe it is, and maybe it's not a fear or a concern, or at least it is now, but it, in like a year's time, won't be something that anyone even thinks about. But it would really suck if we find out that free-to-play attracts a giant fan base, they make a lot of money off it, but then the next shiny thing that comes out, they all say, well, I don't give a shit because I'm mostly $10 in on that, and I'm going to go to something else. Because most people don't spend $100 on LOL. They're just saying that there are people that spend that much more, right? That's what I would assume anyways.
I don't think that really is likely to cost us anything, though. Like, I think the people who are going to be in it for esports, they're going to play, like, they're going to play competitively whether they spend $60 or not. Like, having invested a little bit more money in the game is not going to cause you to stick around and all of a sudden become a valuable part of the community or even a regular watcher of the games. I just think that having it free to play means that you're going to have more, you're going to have a bigger pool, and then some of those people will find that this is something they're passionate about
right.
and then become a valuable part. Like, I don't think it's, I think it's just like, for us, it's a win neutral. There is no lose for us. The only problem is whether or not Blizzard can monetize it properly and make the money they need off of it in the way that they want to.
I think that was a pretty fucking excellent way to put it, Greg, to be honest with you. So, Goatlust.
All right.
Thank you for your call, man.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Hey, Goatlust, is it true that the water, like, swirls the opposite direction down there?
The toilet?
I've no fucking idea. I don't pay
does.
Attention.
Well,
it what
does.
Way does it,
it does.
It, what way does your toilet swirl?
Dude, I've looked at the fucking toilet and gone, oh, I wonder
Come
which
on,
way it's
Goatlust. Swirling. I know you've washed one of your own craps, flushed down the toilet. Pay attention next time.
Oh, God.
All right, next time you tell me.
All right, mate. I'll look into it. All right. I'll report back next week.
Literally.
Thank you, sir. Take care. Have a good night.
Later, buddy.
Bye-bye. All right. Let's do wrap-ups. It's true, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
I've never been
south. I don't know.
I think so. Pain user. Final thoughts. Final.
X6 pain user.
X6 pain user.
Thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks guys for being on the show. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at pain user. And be sure, if you're a fan of me in HD, be sure and tune in tomorrow to our first broadcast in a long time for the IGN Daily. And obviously IPL5 is coming up in November, so be sure and stay tuned for that. But yeah, check us out tomorrow night, and thanks for watching. Peace.
Word, Idra.
Yep, I'd like to thank everyone for watching. All my fans. Also thank Team Evil Geniuses, our sponsors, new title sponsor Raid Call, as well as Intel, SteelSeries, Monster, Kingston Hybrex, Beyond Gaming, and Sapphire. And thank you.
What, in control? Why are you shaking your head, man?
You put SteelSeries in front of Monster, Greg.
I always do. I don't know why.
There's a hierarchy here. It needs to be respected.
The perfect sponsor call would be, we want to give a shout out to our title sponsor, Raid Call. And we'd like to thank our other sponsors as well. Intel, Monster, SteelSeries, Kingston, Beyond Gaming, as well as Sapphire.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh in the middle of that, Jeff.
That's
I saw Idris a screenshot of Mil4GG.
Oh, which one?
It says again, idrajit.tv for a player with skill. And then it says, fuck you, happy face.
Actually skilled, yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. All
right. I had fun with him this morning.
A little bit of angst. That's not my only shadow
sweet. Oh, sorry.
Okay. I just had to correct Greg. I had to set right what was done wrong.
Set it right, son.
I, too, want to give a shout-out to Evil Geniuses. We announced that this Saturday we're going to be doing a show match series against Fnatic, both in Dota 2 as well as in StarCraft 2. Check that out. It's going to be casted by Azale. Some of you might know him from Masters Cup. Speaking of which, that, too, is starting up very soon. Casted mostly by Azale and myself, but there'll be guest appearances by other people as well. It's going to be excellent. For me personally, thank you to everyone at PAX. I was walking around Seattle, and I got more people to recognize me, and they were calling me, you know, the hometown hero and stuff. Like, you guys are fucking awesome, Seattle. I really appreciate it. Made me feel right at home, and if any of you guys are watching the show, just know that it meant a lot to me, and I'm really, 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 really thankful. It just was an amazing trip. Played a few games that I'm really excited about. If you guys haven't checked them out yet, the game... XCOM Enemy Unknown that's coming out October 9th is going to be absolutely amazing. And then I also got to play Colonial Marines, which looks really fun. And then I played the new Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. And that game, you just basically run around as a cyborg cutting everything apart with a sword, which is
kind of cool.
I can't think of a better way to spend a Saturday. I'm sorry, guys. There's very few ways to spend a Saturday. And then people have asked, like, what we're doing in September and October. It's actually it's a quieter couple of months as opposed to what we've been used to, which is traveling every other weekend or every weekend. So you'll see us streaming. Idra and myself, we're both on Twitch as well as the rest of EG. He's Idra and I'm – or you're Idra there, right?
EG underscore Idra.
EG underscore Idra, and I'm In Control TV. Check us out. And then otherwise, thank you guys for tuning in. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, sir. For me, we'll be talking more about Dota 2, StarCraft 2, League of Legends, some Shoot Mania, and other games that made an appearance in the esports realm tomorrow on Live on 3 from PAX. And wait, it made it sound like we're doing a Live on 3 live from PAX. That's not the case. We'll talk about the games that were live at PAX. Anyway, Live on 3 / for myself, Sir Scoots. And then this weekend, I'll be casting the TSL 4 finals along with Day 9. Thanks for tuning in, though, everyone, to Inside the Game yet again. And we'll see you next week for another episode tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Live on 3. With that being said, thanks to our sponsor, SteelSeries, Monster, and Kingston HyperX. We'll see you next time, bitches. We're out of here. Peace.
Adios.
Claire.